So this is the art of chanting, and we've been discussing about the first offense to the holy name, which is sadhu-nindo, to blaspheme the devotees of the Lord, who dedicated their lives to propagating the holy name. That's the definition Prabhupada gives in Nectar Devotion. But it's a more generic definition. Sadhu-nindo means to defile or to ridicule any saintly person or saintly lady. In other words, there's a certain, we should be guided by a certain mood of respect. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Shikshastakam, he explains that our respect should be one of the four primary qualities. There are many qualities of a devotee, but one of the four primary qualities is respect. Humility. What are the other two? I'm told humility and respect. What are the other two? Four primary qualities. Tolerance and pridelessness. Where do we find these four qualities described? Has anyone heard the verse Trinadapi?
Yes.
What is that verse?
Trinadapi Sunchena.
So in this verse, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is listing the four primary qualities of a Gaudiya Vaishnava. So what are those four primary qualities?
Tolerance, humility, pridelessness.
There's a prayer called Shikshastakam. Some of you may have heard about it. And there's a third verse, which some of you may have also heard about, which is supposed to be around our necks like a mala, like you wear your diamond necklace or your gold necklace or your Tulsi Kanti. It's supposed to be constantly hanging on our neck. So anything that's on your neck, it's there. It's part of you. So this verse should be part of us. Not only the verse, but what's in it. So what's in this verse, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is delineating four essential qualities. It's called Srup Lakshana. Four essential qualities of a devotee of Krishna, of Vishnu. This is Vaishnava Srup Lakshanam. So these four essential qualities, so we should know very clearly and deeply, know what they are, and try to live them, embody them, and express them in our everyday dealings. You've heard about these qualities? First is humility. Humility, and then he uses an analogy, Trina. Trina means a blade of grass. Trina. We should be so humble. We should be just like a blade of grass. You step on it, it doesn't complain. It just bends over. And then you sit on the grass, it doesn't say, oh, you're sitting on me, get off. If I sit on you, then you'll say, hey, get off. And the grass is very humble, doesn't complain. It gives us our seat. So this is like a grass, and then tolerant, like the tree. Because a tree tolerates scorching heat in the summer, and we stand under the tree to get relief from the summer heat, under the branches and shade of the tree. But where is the full weight of the heat? The full weight of the heat is going on the tree. The tree is feeling the 50 degrees, but underneath the tree we're feeling 35. It's quite the shade, the cooling shade of the tree. So we should be more tolerant. Scorching heat, freezing rain, freezing cold. No complaints. You see you don't see in India much, but you go in America where we're from, and we lived in a temperate zone, so every winter there'd be 3 or 4 months of snow. White stuff all over the ground. So the trees, there would sometimes snow and then rain and snow, and then the trees would get all this water on the branches and then become icicles. Icicles are like long pieces of ice. And then the tree goes like this, the weight of all this ice hanging on the tree, this frozen water. It it just bends the branches of the tree. That like it looks like you can feel the tree is like crying. And I was like, you know, get this stuff off me, you know. Unbearable freezing winters and being covered with ice and snow. So this is the example that Mahaprabhu gives us of tolerance, more tolerant than a tree. And then he says, Aman means respect, regard, honor. Honor, respect, regard, care, reverence. So it says that we should be very respectful of others, have great honor others, respect others. It's called man, mani dana. Dana means da means dan, to give. We should give all honor, all respect and regard and care to others. But then that's our expression to others. What do we expect in return? Nothing. We're not businessmen. We're not psychological businessmen, or we're not dealing in tit for tat. We're giving agents, not business agents. Everyone in the material world is a business agent. And this is the plane of exploitation, where I scratch your back and you scratch mine. No scratching my back, me no scratching your back. So this is basically all relationships are like this. But in the transcendental dimension of spiritual personalities, they live in a higher viewpoint. They want to give without calculation of receiving. Oh, if I give this much, what will I get? Oh, and if I treat him very nicely, then later on I can ask him for something. People have all these calculations, buttering each other up and whatnot. But it says, amanida manidena. So amani means for myself, on my side, I don't want any honor. I don't want any pratishta. Pratishta means honor. Kamani kanak pratishta. I don't want any honor. I don't require or need any honor or distinction or any respect or care. You step on me, you slap me, you do whatever you want. And that's what Radharani explains. She indicates it there, and then later in Ashlashiva Paratam, she reveals the intricacies of it. Krishna, you can trample me under your feet, you can kick me away, or you can crush me, you can keep me so close to you that you crush me by your loving embrace. This is tolerance. This is the epitome of that quality which is developed through Shikshastakam. So these are the four qualities that should be these are the primary qualities. There are 26 qualities of devotee, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu presented four. Because practically speaking, in these four you have all the other 22, when you think about it. So we should think how much respectful I am, how much am I free from distinction, honor, and how much humble I am, and how much tolerant I am. I'm very, very tolerant as long as I have food in my stomach. I'm very, very peaceful. And I hum very nicely. But if I don't eat for one day, and see how tolerant I am, see how peaceful I am if I fast for one or two days, and if my belly is full, I'm very considerate of others. I'm very, very kind and generous. But if my belly is empty, I'll cut your throat to get some food. I'll cut your throat so that I get food. Get out of my way. Where's the food? Give me the mouth. It's extremely interesting to watch devotees when they're breaking a fast. What kind of qualities they exhibit at that time. How much they lose everything. After doing nirjal all day and next day. I remember I was in Mayapur sometimes, and there were the devotees over there, they're very fond of rice. So on Ekadasi, of course, there's no eating of rice or beans, so the Bengali Deshi Bhaktas, they would collect all the rice from that day. They'd make sure if they couldn't eat rice, they wanted to at least be aware of rice. aware of it. They wanted to see it. They wanted to see it and know that it was nearby. So they wouldn't eat it, of course. They would honor the bread, but they wanted that rice would be nearby. So they would collect the rice. They wouldn't like forget about rice on Ekadasi, but they would collect the rice into a big pot, and they would add water, a little salt. And they let it sit there overnight, Ekadasi night, right nearby, so they know it's there. So they don't feel, well, I know I'm fasting from rice, but it's there. It's nearby. It's in my room in a big pot with some salt and some water. And then the next day, at whatever time it is, the breakfast is 4:51 or whatever, because the sun rises much earlier over there. And then immediately they're sitting in the room around the pot with the semi-fermented rice, which is apparently quite good for your health also. That's a good fermentation. And they're 4 o'clock, 4:30 in the morning, whatever it is, huge piles of rice, not one day's worth, 2 days' worth, to make up for the loss on Ekadasi. They're all sitting around, oh, Prabhu! Forget about japa and Bhagavat Shravan and any other kind of thing. So I've seen this with my eyes several times. I always found it so amusing that these young men, there's so much fire they have, so much fire. I appreciated their healthy constitution that they all had, that they were so anxious to honor the prasad. Couldn't wait. So therefore, when we're tested, when there's some strain, then we find out what our mettle, they say, what our mettle is, M-E-T-T-L-E, what is our mettle? And we're put to the test. And we see, what is that book, Vaishnav K, what kind of Vaishnav am I? Jaiva Thakur Maharaj translated this book by Bhaktivinoda Thakur years ago. You saw that book, Vaishnav K? He did this book in English. Very interesting book. So, anyway, we were discussing his first offense and then giving some ideas of rectification, because knowingly or unknowingly, we probably have committed Vaishnava Aparad, are committing Vaishnava Aparad, or we will commit Vaishnava Aparad. It's inevitable in this environment that we're living in. It's just the nature of this age. Because remember, we are living in Kali Yuga, and Kali Yuga means that 75% of the environment is full of bad qualities. 75% of the environment is atheistic. 75% of the environment is anti-God. So we are trying to live in and create an environment which is only 25%. To live in a God-centered environment and to live with spiritual values and pure moral values, we're the minority. It's only 25%. 75% of every person and every place is totally involved in sinful activities, forgetfulness of God. So sinful activities means greed and anger and lust and envy and fault finding and quarreling and backbiting. We're surrounded everywhere. So then try to be like a little saintly and tolerant and appreciative and respectful of others, it's difficult, because everything is dragging you the other direction. Imagine if you went into a room of people, or say, the teacher says, now all the students, please, you go in this room and you study for 1 hour to prepare for the examination. So if you went in the room and every student would put their head on the desk and fell asleep, and you were the only one, you said, well, I also feel tired. So by association with all the sleeping students, you would probably also feel sleepy. It works like that. So we're associating the newspaper, the magazine, the television, the radio, the people we see, the people we work with, the people we move with. They're all in Maya. They're all covered in illusion. They're all ungodly. 75% of them. So no wonder we get infected. We pick up the vibration, the backbiting tendency, the short temper vibration, the tendency to be short tempered, the tendency to be violent, the tendency to quarrel, tendency to find fault or be. So that it comes into us, even if we have some good intention. We'd really like to be good devotees, but somehow or other we get this happens. That's why we were reading earlier that Bhaktivinoda Thakur, or rather Chaitanya Bhagavat, said that the main cause of Vaishnava Aparad, this is very interesting when you think about it, the main cause of Vaishnava Aparad is association with materialistic people. Because associating with materialistic people creates that type of particular mentality. The source of aparads is not your mouth or your mind or your hands if you do something physical. The source of aparads is actually the position of the heart. It's the mentality. So the hateful mentality, revengeful or hateful mentality, this enters into us. This envious mentality, this revengeful, hateful mentality, it enters into our heart, and it's almost like osmosis. And then that creates this basic negative quality, which kind of settles into our heart. It's that negative quality which forces us, and that envy. So that's why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was once asked by the residents of Kulina Gram, can you please tell me what's the achar, Vaishnava achar? Because there's so many things, so many do's and don'ts, and so what's the main thing that Vaishnavas should do? So Lord Chaitanya, he paused for a second and he said, Asat Sangatyag e Vaishnava achar. This is the achar. I don't mean pickle. Maybe that's achar. This is achar. He said that the main thing is to avoid association with materialistic people. It means you pick up their ideas, you pick up their thinking, you speak to them. There's four principles here that are given to change the vision. Implementing these four principles will help overcome the offense of sadhu-ninda, offending saintly persons. So this is something that we came up with. I'm sure you can probably come up with your own ideas, but this was something that we've worked with. It's been beneficial for us. The first one, this in other words, these are four suggestions to help us overcome the tendency of committing sadhu-ninda, or the tendency to blaspheme or ridicule or criticize devotees of the Lord, Vaishnavas. The first one is to cultivate the, quote, finding good nature. In other words, cultivate the nature that, and I'll explain. No devotee is absolutely bad. Everyone has some good qualities, so try to see the good in everyone. Develop the mood of sincerely appreciating the value of others. This will act as a powerful antidote, means a remedy or whatever, preventive measure. This will act as a powerful antidote against fault finding. So instead of finding fault, which means the negative or the bad, find the good. Cultivate the opposite nature. Because we already have. We don't have to cultivate. As I said, living in Kali Yuga, it comes with the car. When you buy a car, you usually get four tires. Most cars come with four tires. And they also come with a spare tire. When you buy a car, you get a spare tire, right? Is that right? Yeah. So when you get a body in Kali Yuga, automatically, man or woman, Indian, German, Russian, French, whatever, American, as soon as you get a body in Kali Yuga, you get some special features, stereo and bucket seats and 5-speed transmission, and you get these special features. So one of the special features of a Kali Yuga body is the vicious tendency to criticize and fight with others. This is automatic. And just when will it express itself? Today with your mother, tomorrow with your friend, or a week from now with your school teacher, or 6 years later with your boss? You stupid, I've been wanting to tell you this the whole time. And we just flare up and cut into somebody that we're supposed to have regard for, because we keep it within us, because really we want to bite them from the day one, but because they're our boss, then we try to internalize our negative feelings. And sometimes they get the best of us. So cultivate. We really have to cultivate it. Something, and then we have to work hard at it because it's not our nature. Our svabhava is opposite that. Everyone has a PhD in finding faults. Anyone, you ask anyone in the room, you say, look, now listen, here's a notepad, here's a pen and a notepad. Now I want you to go to the Hare Krishna temple and write down all the faults you find. And you'll come back with like 20 pages. So many faults. Just about the temple. Not about people, just about the temple. The window's broken, this, that, you know, whatever. You're fine. You'll get like 20 pages. Then say, all right, now go back to the Hare Krishna temple and write down, watch the people, the devotees, and then write down all the faults. Oh, like 100 pages. And now if I give you a notebook and say, now go back to the temple and write all the good things about this building, this temple structure, you'll come back 3 days later, Maharaj, I tried my best. I couldn't get anything down in the paper. And they say, all right, no problem. Okay, now go back and try to write something good about the devotees, about the Vaishnavas. So then you'll come back 2 weeks later. Listen, I tried. I went there for 2 weeks. I really tried to write something good. I couldn't find anything good about anyone. Really? And there was somebody they were offering a lot of flowers to, and he sat on a big seat. Maybe he was a guru. I think maybe guru came. And many Brahmins, they had strings around their neck or something, some bunch of Brahmins or something. I saw many devotees there. But even after 2 weeks, you couldn't find it. So this is, because it's Kali Yuga, this is the way it works. So therefore, we really have to work hard at cultivating the finding good nature. Number two. No one, and we have to believe this principle, no one is an eternal rogue. Rogue means gunda, dacoit, whatever. Goon, bad guy. No one is an eternal nitya gunda. Before passing judgment on others, one should always remember that every saint had a past. And now let's think about it, even from the Vedic paradigm. You have Valmiki. Has anyone ever heard of Valmiki?
Yes.
He wrote Ramayana. And that was all in his meditation. He became such a great devotee that just by entering meditation he could see the Leela of Ram in Samadhi. But before that, he was a thief. He was a chore. Right? A thief. And maybe, I don't know, maybe usually when you're a thief, you have to bump off some people sometimes. Because you're in their house and you're robbing them, and then they wake up and sometimes they just kill you. So he was a very bad person. Not a very saintly person. Not saintly at all. He was a rogue, a gunda, a chore. But somehow he got the mercy of, Narada Muni or someone. And Narada Muni told him that he should chant, do some Nam Sankirtan, join the Sankirtan party. And he said, forget it. He says, I can't chant. He said, you should chant Ram Nam. Rama, Rama, Rama. Say, I'm a gunda. I don't care about the spiritual stuff. Bhagavan Nam, it's good. I don't have faith in these kind of things. All right, listen, I have a good medicine for you. Because in my shop I have many, many medicines. And I will give the appropriate medicine for the disease. So because you're so much sometimes murdering people and killing people and robbing them, then I have a good mantra for you which will feel very comfortable for you. You simply chant Mara, Mara, Mara. Because Mara means Marana. Marana means kill, die, death, murder. So then Valmiki said, yes, this is very good mantra. I'm already chanting 16 rounds every day. And without aparad also. Whenever I chant a few rounds, then I rob somebody, I murder them, then so it's very good. Sakshat Darshan chanting, very good. I know this mantra, it really works. Nam Rup Gun Lila. Chatike. So then he gave him this mantra. So then Mara, 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 Mara. And sometimes he became a little absent-minded and Ma, Ra became Ra, Ma. The same two syllables, Ma, Ma, Ra, and Ra, Ma. And Mara, 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 Rama, 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 Rama. Rama, Rama. That's nice. Rama, Rama. And so he started chanting Ram Nam inadvertently, without understanding even, and then innocently, then it took its effect. And he became such a great rishi, Valmiki Rishi, that he did such tapasya, such austerity, that he, because this was in the Treta Yuga, and Treta Yuga, they were very powerful personalities, what to speak of Satya Yuga. But this type of austerity was done generally in Satya Yuga, where the yogis were so great that they could conserve their life air inside their bones. They could live within their bones, conserve their consciousness and their life air inside their bones. Of course, nowadays our life air is spread throughout this external body through the nerves and skin and covering of the bones. But in Satya Yuga, they could take shelter inside the bones, and bones are pretty long-lasting. Skin is not very long-lasting. Flesh is not very long-lasting. You die, then a week or so later, all the ants can nibble you up. Millions of ants. You ever see a lizard fall on the ground? These lizards, what do they call them? Chipkali or something like that. Chipkali, they fall on the veranda somewhere at 6 o'clock in the morning, and by noontime they become like Mahaprasad for all the ants. The ants have eaten them up. Finished. Body's finished. I've seen. You live in a village, you see all these things. So they can really munch into the Mahaprasad. So if we fall on the ground in a field somewhere, just the ants can eat us up, what to speak of the jackals and dogs. So they would go into meditation, Himalayas, and their body is Valmiki. The word Valmiki actually means anthill. So then he was in Treta Yuga, so he still had this ability in Treta Yuga, because some overlapping is there. So he went into meditation, the ants, they ate away his whole body, all his flesh, skin, everything, eyeballs, everything. And then he was just merged in his bones, and his huge anthill was formed around his body, like Hiranyakashipu. You must have seen the painting. But that was Satya Yuga. So now he became, you know, in his deep meditation. Then, of course, Magrari, everyone knows about Magrari. So every saint had a past, and every sinner has a future. So either way you look at it, we should be, no one's an eternal rogue. So we should be a little hesitant or reluctant to pass judgment on anyone. Jagai and Madai were certainly decrepit fellows of Navadvip, the height of degradation in their character and behavior. Although they were born Brahmins, Jagannanda and Manavananda, no one would even call them their names because they were so fallen. It's called Jagai and Madai. The birth name was Jagannanda. You know, that's God's name. Bhagavan Nam and Madhavananda. But they were so ungodly, there's no way someone's going to even benedict them by reminding them of Bhagavan. So they didn't call them Madhavananda or Jagannanda. They just called them Jagai. Jagai and Madai. It's very a derogatory term, actually. It's like, in English, you would say that if someone has a name, it's called them some. There's a dirty drunk, the dirty bum or dirty drunk. It's very derogatory. But somehow, by the mercy of Nittai, then they became, obviously, from sinners to saints. So even a first-class rogue is a potential saint of the future. Place a sinner in the company of saints, and his bad nature will change in a moment. Lord Jesus said, "Hate the sin, not the sinner." So due to bad association or upbringing or due to purva sanskaras, some people are bad. And but if they associate with good people, then they develop good samskaras, spiritual samskaras, and they can supplant and replace the negative ones and the demoniac ones. Everyone has a good streak of demoniac blood in them. And they could do so many abominable things if they were left to their own design. due to the reinforcement of culture and family and the mores of society, people generally control themselves. But you often see, you read about these in newspapers, they say some people were stranded on an island, they were shipwrecked, and then one guy ate the other guy. You must have seen this. And everyone's appalled. Around the world, they're appalled. How? This guy ate his wife, you know, or whatever. Because it was a matter of survival. So when we're tested and under great strain, then all the bad qualities come out. So the third point is, try to see Krishna everywhere. The ultimate doer behind all activities or action is Krishna, the cause of all causes. Krishna is within everything and everyone, and everything is within Krishna. Try to feel Krishna's presence everywhere and see His divine hand in all events. So, someone comes and some devotee comes in and what you consider to be insults you or gives you a hard time, whatever. Then tolerate. It's okay, Krishna. I deserved it. I deserve more. He's right. Actually, everything he said is correct. I have no argument, no defense, no revenge, no defense, no argument, no defense, no revenge. So then, it takes two to fight. If some guy starts hitting you and you don't resist, then he just knocks you out and walks away. But if he's slapping you, then you slap him, then you have a good fight on your hands. You may win, he may win, you both may lose, who knows what. So there's no, it's called the non-cooperation movement. This is Gaudiya Vaishnavism. Non-cooperation movement. We don't cooperate with the movements against us. When the world moves against us, or people in the world move against us, we don't move against them. We don't move against the world. We tolerate. We accept. Yes, this is good for me. What a great friend. Gave me a few slaps. So this is a nice point. Because Krishna's there. For the devotee and everything, he tries to trace out the source and make the connection with the good thing. It's easy to make the connection when we get a windfall, or we get some benefit, or we get some promotion. Oh, I got a raise in my pay, Krishna's mercy. Then a week later you get fired. Say, oh, this is not Krishna's mercy. I got a good job and I got fired and I don't know how to make my car payments, my rent's due, and I already spent all my earnings. Krishna, you're not very kind. So then we don't see how that works. But then somehow we get another job, and in that job there's somebody in the job that's a Hare Krishna devotee. Then when lunchtime comes in that new job, then he starts preaching to us about Krishna. Then we get inclined. And then we look back, oh yes, this was Krishna's mercy that I lost that job and got a new job, because ultimately I got the shelter of Krishna. Because a lot of times we don't see the immediate result of what's happening to us. We become absorbed in the momentary action or event and lose sight of the future and past. We just become enamored by the present circumstances. Oh, what's this happening? Oh, the world's falling on top of me. This is terrible. There's no future for me. And the past is... Now, why does it happen? And what's the purpose of this? But actually, there's a purpose behind everything. And that's Krishna's hand. Because when a devotee turns his face towards Krishna, then Krishna takes... What you can say, enters... Like the Bible, they say, enters your name into the holy book. Krishna makes a file, creates a software program. Bharati Patela. Okay, one file is there in Krishna's accounting system. Then he's monitoring. So he says, oh, I have the software in my hand, so I have to program it in such a way that this person surrenders to me. So I'm going to make all her friends go against her. Why you gave up onions and garlic? Why is this Hare Krishna? They're all crazy. I've seen them. I've been around the world. I saw them in London. They're all crazy. I saw them in America. They're crazy. Why you associate with those people? You're a good person. What happened to you? And like this. The environment will appear to turn unfavorable. Friends will turn into enemies. relatives will become antagonistic because Krishna is testing. Do you want me, an eternal life, or do you want to live in the material world with your temporary family relations? Everyone has to pass so many tests. So being offended or thinking that you're offended or feeling that you're offended, this is all part of Krishna's play. You offended me. I'm offended. What do you think Krishna thinks about us? Do you think Krishna thinks that we ever made an offense to him? Since we belong to him, and we never really thought about that. How wayward we are, how forgetful we are of God. We're his sons and daughters. We're far from his fold. So we're so much misbehaved and so much doing our own thing. But yet he's not taking revenge. He's supplying us all the facility to be independent. Try to see Krishna everywhere. And the fourth and last of these four principles to help us overcome sadhananda is, of course they're kind of similar in one sense, but changing the attitude. One was, this is internal conception. The others are actually external, practicing. Turn the mind from bad to good, negative to positive, and suddenly you will find heaven on earth. What is the use? This is a question. What is the use of reading Shastra and chanting Hare Krishna if one keeps an evil eye and a foul tongue? What is, we chant so much Maha Mantra and we read so much Shastra and attend so many classes, but then when it comes to everyday practical interaction with others, especially the Vaishnava Samaj or devotees, then we speak all kinds of crazy things and look, have a funny eye and looking at devotees, oh, this devotee, that devotee. And where is it, what's happening? What is this chanting? What is this reading? There's no effect. It's like you have a plant. You have a plant and it's in a pot and there's some soil there. Then you take a piece of plastic, like a plastic bag, and you wrap it around the plant and cover the soil. And every day you water, every day you put water in the plant. What's going to happen? Water is going to hit the piece of plastic and run off and not go into the soil. There's so much water. And then your plant dies and you tell your friend, what has happened? I've been watering every day this plant. I've been putting water every day religiously. But the plant died. I say, you stupid. You have to cover the soil with plastic. So every day we're chanting Hare Krishna. Every day we're reading. But there's nothing. It's not going into the soil. It's just running off the plastic. So there should be change, there should be growth. And some byproducts, some leaves, some flowers, some fruits. And that's the behavior. That's the sarubhushanam that Kapila Muni describes in third canto. That's the fruit of sadhana. The fruit of sadhana is bhushanam. Bhushanam means ornament. Sarubhushanam, Tatiksha Krunika, Suridasavadehanam, Ajata Shatrava, Shanto, Sarunam, Sarubhushanam, Sarava. Sarava, Sarabhushanam. So these are the ornaments of a saintly devotee, that he's tolerant and compassionate. And he controls his tongue. Vacha Vegam, Manasakrota Vegam. He controls his tongue and mind with higher knowledge, with higher attitude, with more loving viewpoint. So change the attitude. So why do you maintain? This is something Bhakti Sanatana was saying. Why do you maintain a vision of enemies and speak badly of others? Always remember that the environment around us is positive and favorable. It is helping us. Sometimes devotees say, oh, this place is very bad. I have to get out of this place. This temple is no good. I have to go to another temple. Or this place is very, I have to go to Vrindavan. This Moscow temple is no good. I have to go to Vrindavan. So then, I'll go to Vrindavan and do bhajan. That's the holy land. Then you come to Vrindavan, and still you find so many problems with Vrindavan. All these pandas, all these businessmen, this rickshaw wala, this, that. So wherever we are, that's perfect. That's actually perfect. And just like, for example, if someone is a sailor, and then they take him in his boat, his sailboat, and they put it in a plane, and they come and they drop it in the Pacific Ocean and say, here you are. And he goes, and what's he going to do? You drop the sailor with his sailboat, you pick him up from the Mediterranean Sea, and you take him to the Pacific Ocean, you drop him in the ocean. Now what will that sailor do? He'll sail the boat and try to find a harbor, somewhere where he can park the boat and get something to eat. You won't say, oh, what's this? This isn't the Mediterranean Sea. There's no wind here. What is this, Pacific Ocean? Okay, I'm not going to sail. No, he sails. He does this. He catches the wind. He adjusts the sails in such a way and does it. He tacks the boat in a certain way to catch some wind and then makes some zigzaggy progress across the water. And he gets out his sextant and his telescope and tries to see, is there anything out there? And where am I? And locate himself and goes on with his sailing work. And the same as a devotee. Devotee's a sailor. We're sailing in the ocean of samsara. Right? Samsara. Samudra. So wherever we are, we say, oh, okay, now you put me in Moscow. Okay, Hare Krishna, I'll sail in Moscow. Now I'm in London, Paris. Okay, Hare Krishna, keep sailing. Not that, oh, I can only sail in Mediterranean. Water, wind is what makes the sail work. Water holds up the boat and wind pushes it. So you come any place and you do bhajan. Vrindavan is everywhere. Radha and Krishna everywhere. And it's with us to throw up our sails and catch the wind and then feel their presence wherever we are. So this is the point that always remember that the environment means our surroundings, where we are, the land, the terra firma, the firm soil under my feet, this land, this place, these people, these are my perfect friends. This temple commander is the best guy in the world. This temple president is a demigod. I couldn't find a more perfect person. And so, and then you just carry on. It's not like, hey, this temple president, I was in another temple and the temple commander is really nice. This guy's a... No. But, so it's... don't complain. Just sail. Imagine you're... They say, Sridhar Swami once said, it was very interesting statement he made, because it's a takeoff on a popular statement. He said like this, he said, a good carpenter doesn't quarrel with his stools.
Stools.
Stool is what comes out the backside. It's called stool. No, that saying, everyone knows what the saying is. That's what I'm trying to explain. Sridhar Swami, Bhakti Rakshak, Sridhar Deva Swami, he gave a very interesting twist to this when he was preaching to devotees. Don't quarrel with your stools. Because the phrase, he said a good carpenter doesn't quarrel with his stools. The phrase is tools. But he was saying, he said, you've heard the expression, so a good devotee doesn't quarrel with his stools. So stools means our reactions, what's being produced from us, what's coming out of us, the vibration, the thought, the thinking, and what that brings back to us, what that attracts to us. So a good devotee doesn't quarrel with his stools. That's quite interesting. So this is the point. In other words, the phrase is that a carpenter, he's doing his work and he doesn't say, oh, and he's not getting the job done. He's, oh, it's the fault of this hammer. I can't get this chair is not coming out correctly. It's something wrong with this saw or this drill. He throws the drill away. I have to get a new drill. It's this drill. So we're the same way. It's, oh, this temple is bad. This place is bad. I have to go to a new place. No, we don't quarrel with whatever's been hand has been dealt to us. This is the point. The environment is helping us. It's positive. Now this is the clincher right here. Sri Krishna personally arranges the environment for us. Why? He's personally arranged it for our improvement and spiritual elevation. This is what the devotee actually thinks. He accepts. That's why I said he's an accepting. He's an agent of acceptance. He doesn't quarrel with his whatever. He doesn't quarrel. He doesn't fight. He doesn't resist. He accepts. There's resistance. There's acceptance, and then there's synthesis. So he accepts, and then whatever resistance comes, he says, "Oh, this will make me strong." Just like that's the whole principle of lifting weights. It's based on resistance, right? You know that these people get muscles. You know they lift weights. So you have the power to lift 20 kilos. So then you try 25. So that 25 is resisting you. It's going against you because your body is saying, "Oh, I can only lift 20." And you through this resistance. They keep trying, and then the body says, "Oh, I'm facing this resistance. I need extra muscle tissue. I need extra power to cope with this resistance." So then the body adjusts itself to the resistance or responds to the resistance by increasing the muscle mass in the arms. So then you keep trying 25. And then day after day after day. And then pretty soon, I can lift 25 kilos because the muscle mass increased. More muscle tendons or tendons, muscle fibers, whatever. And you have more power. Your arm became, you get a big, muscle. And then you can lift. So the devotee's like this. He's a weightlifter. The resistance comes, so he doesn't run away. He doesn't criticize. "Oh, this resistance." He accepts it. He accepts the resistance, and he increases his bhakti. He increases his hearing and chanting. Because, "Oh, Krishna, you've sent this to me." That's the whole thing. Krishna is always sending all these beautiful people. All these beautiful people come to us. What to speak of the beautiful people that don't come to us and glorify us behind our back? They're even better. So this way Krishna arranges to purify the mind and heart. Because to enter Nitya Dham or Golok Dham, we have to have a pure mind and heart. So purification is painful. Everyone has heard the expression, "No pain, no gain." So this is very much true in the progress of bhakti. It's very painful. It's very painful through four stages. It's painful. Shraddha, Sarusanga, Bhajana Kriya, Anartha Nivritti. These are four stages. It's painful. Then the level of Nishta, then the headache starts to go away. The Tylenol takes its effect. You don't feel the pain anymore. Not much. Time to time. And then Ruchi, then you only remember that you were in pain. The level of Ruchi. You still have some remembrance that you were suffering at the level of Ruchi and Bhajan. And it goes like this. I remember Satsrup Maharaj, Srila Satsrup Maharaj, he said, he called this Vajana Kriya level, he said, this is the vast, vast intermediate zone. You're neither here nor there. You're not where you started from, and you haven't attained the goal. You're in the middle. Intermediate means the middle. And it's vast. It's vast means unlimited. Ananta, the vast intermediate zone. Then we say, "Can you explain further about this?" And he said, "Yes. It's like you're on the shore of you're on the beach on the shore on the tata on the bank of the river, ocean, whatever. And then you're on safe ground. You're on your land. You're on your country land, whatever. So then you jump into the Indian Ocean with the idea to swim to Thailand or whatever is on the other side of the Indian Ocean over there. And then, so then you left the land and you left India. Now you're in the Indian Ocean, you're swimming. And then after some time, you can't see India where you left. And you can't see where you're going. And you're in the middle of the ocean. And it's vast. In all directions you look, and so there's water everywhere. I can't remember where I left from. And I can't see where I'm going. Anyway, I have to keep stroking and paddling and swimming, kicking. So this is Bhajana Kriya. We know it. We can't go. Once you're in the middle of the ocean, you what do you do? "Well, let me go back to India." I said, "Well, that's ridiculous. And I lose everything I've gained. I've already kicked and swam so far. For days I've been swimming. Why? That's pointless. That's ridiculous. I can't go back there. But I have to go forward, but I don't feel the inspiration. I can't see where that place is. So this is painful. It's very painful to swim. Because you have no choice. Either you swim and reach the goal, or bloop, 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 bloop. You drown. So it's painful. Mentally painful, what to speak of physically. So, but this pain is a pain of love. Because this pain is given to us by Krishna. It's a burden of love. Krishna has given us this pain so that we can make the gain and attain Him and live with Him forever in His divine service. This is the positive prospect that awaits us. So the Krishna has personally arranged the environment for us. Oh, Krishna, you mean to say that you personally picked out this temple commander just for me? Oh, that's so nice of you. You love me so much, and he's such a wonderful person. And you picked out this temple president just for me? Oh, really? You think so much of me? You care so much about me? Krishna, I don't know how I can repay you for so much favors you've been giving me, so much mercy. And you've given me this service, which is I couldn't think of a more horrible service. But you're so kind, you've given me this wonderful, wonderful service, which is exactly what I need to purify me, all my lust and anger and greed and envy and pride and attachments and desires for comfort and position and easy life. You've given me such a terrible, despicable, horrible service. Thank you, thank you. How I love you, let me count the ways. Krishna, you're so kind. I read about your qualities, that you're kind and you're compassionate. And now I'm seeing you, you're displaying them directly, individually, personally, even to little old me. How fortunate I am that you took the trouble to slap me. How lucky I am. You took the trouble out to actually kick me in the backside. I should feel privileged. Not everybody gets kicked by God. Not everybody gets slapped by God. Tom, tom. Like our Pundarik Vidyaniti. Right? Was it? No. Was it? Who was it got slapped by Jagannath? Who was that?
Pundarik.
That's Pundarik Vidyaniti. It's funny, we were discussing Pundarik from another angle before, about Gadadhar and Pundarik. So now the same Pundarik, he was in Jagannath Puri at the time. And it was around the fall, I guess it's fall time. It's Odan Shasti. Odan Shasti, Shasti means sixth. It's the sixth day of a particular season where they offer new clothes to Lord Jagannath. Some type of chadar or gumcha or whatever, the different things they offer down there. And when they make cloth and produce these clothes, they often dip them into starch. Some kind of starch is flour, I guess. Flour and water, that's starch. Some kind of starch, and it makes the cloth stiff. It makes it very stiff, and they can fold it, and it looks somewhat neat and wrinkle-free because it's full of starch. So then they offer this new cloth to Jagannath and Balaram Subhadra without washing it. The starch was still there. Starch is, it was flour, basically, mixed in the cloth, flour and water. So then when Pundarik Vidyaniti came, he saw that. He was taking darshan, Jagannathji, Jagannath Swami. He said, well, look at that. That cloth is all stiff around his neck and must be starch. Why didn't they wash it? What kind of pujaris are these? I mean, they don't even wash the Lord's cloth. Because it's considered that when you buy cloth, at least in terms of puja for Brahmins, that you have to wash it because it's considered contaminated due to the contact with the hand loom and the mystery who made it, and also the starch. Starch is considered contaminated, so you have to wash it and dry it in the sun, and then it becomes purified to wear for puja. So what to speak of the pujari is certainly the same niyam or standard would apply to the Lord. So he was noticing that these neglectful pandas or pujaris, they didn't even wash the Lord's cloth. What is this? This is an aparad. So he was thinking like this, a little bit negative mind. So then when he took rest that night, he had a very interesting dream. Very, very interesting dream. And we must have heard that while he was sleeping at night, these three personalities appeared in his dream. One was golden yellow, one was black like a rain cloud, and the other was white as autumn clouds, and where there's no water. And they didn't have very long arms. They had kind of short arms. And they started slapping him. Hey, why are you offended our pujaris? We like the cloth like this. This is a tradition. We've been wearing cloth like this for thousands of years. Why are you thinking badly in your mind like this? This is not good. Why are you being judgmental like this? Ta, 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 cha, 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 cha. They were slapping him upside of the face, as they say. And then, these three personalities, one was Jagannath Swami, and the other was Balaram, Baladev, and the other was his little sister, Subhadra. I don't know if she was, I think she was clapping. She wasn't slapping, she was clapping. Oh, if your brother's beating somebody up, think, oh yeah, beat him up, come on, give one for me too. Okay, Subhadra, this is for you. Boom! And Balaram says, yes, Subhadra, I'll give you one. Tong, tong, because ladies aren't so aggressive, tend to be a little soft. But also, but they still like a good fight. Although they may not fight themselves. You see some of the biggest people in the audience of these wrestling matches are women. In boxing matches, mostly there's women. They like because they say, oh, wow, this is my husband, and this is me, you know. The two guys in the ring, so the wife thinks, well, this guy is me, and this guy is my husband. They go, oh, yes, give another one. Tom, tom. So this way the wives enjoy vicariously. It's a fact. When you go to these wrestling matches, these in the West and these tag team, and mostly the women are in the audience. It's a very interesting phenomenon because they could never get it up the nerve and starts smashing, but they want to so they can live through the boxers. And so Subhadra was clapping her hands. Yeah, slap him up. Oh, oh. So then, when Pundarik woke up the next day, he was he goes, oh my God, my cheeks are swollen. He looked in the mirror. He said, my cheeks are all red, puffy, and then some devotees came. I forget who came to see him, but who came? Thank you. Swarup Damodara came to see him, meet him in the morning, and because Pundarik, of course, is a great devotee, and he saw him and he said, "What happened to you? Your wife beat you up last night, or your wife slapped you up last night?" And he said, "No, it wasn't like that. I was in a dream. In my dream, Jagannath and Balaram came and Subhadra, she was jumping up and down laughing and they were slapping me up. And it's because I made offense. I passed judgment on the pujaris. I thought they committed an oversight by neglecting to wash Jagannath's new cloth on Odan Shasti. And I learned my lesson, that's for sure." And so this pastime goes on. Of course, this is Leela. Obviously, Pundarik is actually Brishabhanu, Radharani's father. He's a great pure devotee of the Lord, eternal associate of the Lord, obviously. King Brishabhanu in Krishna Leela and Pundarik Vidyanidhi in Gaur Leela. But anyway, he's showing the idea here that we should be careful about thinking the wrong thoughts or making judgment without investigating a little bit more. In other words, how would we correctly assess the situation in this particular example? So say, for example, we came in and we saw a deity wearing starched cloth and we have some awareness of the standard of puja and it should be clean and washed before being offered or whatever. So then we might think, oh, what is this? And so rather than immediately making judgment, we should make further inquiry. We should ask the pujaris. It seems to me that this new cloth you offered has starch in it. Is that the standard or... Oh, yes, we've been offering for thousands of years like this. This is what we do over here. And rather, Jagannath likes it. He likes that stiff, that sticky, stiff feeling of starch cloth. Oh, okay, fine. Radhe Radhe or whatever, you know, Jai Jagannath. So that way you're just keeping cool because you haven't immediately, as I said the other day, looking, thinking, and then judging. You're pausing, you're withholding your judgment upon further investigation. So everyone, everything in the environment is friendly, moving us toward our goal of surrendering to Krishna, taking full shelter only in Him, and loving Him without reservation. Learn, this is the conclusion of this point about changing the attitude, learn to see all with love, and you will see love everywhere. So these are the four principles that one could implement in their own life, although they're somewhat related to one another, to avoid the tendency to offend Vaishnavas, Sadhananda. Cultivate the finding good nature. Understand that no one is an eternal rogue. Try to see Krishna's hand in everything, His divine hand in all events, and change the attitude.
Just you say to somebody, I think this is one good to do, like to say.
Well, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, I'm not sure exactly what you're asking, but Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in one writing, he was saying that Kali Yuga is such a unfortunate time that although everywhere, all the ancient scriptures, they enumerate the benefits of associating together, hearing and chanting with, in association of other devotees, Kali Yuga is such a disastrous age that he says that generally it's best that one does bhajan alone. This was his experience himself back in the 1850s and 60s in Orissa and Puri and Navadvip Mandal in the general society at the time. His experience was that, and he said like this, that he concluded that because of Kali Yuga such, it's better, although it's the best thing, the best way to make spiritual advancement is to associate with proper devotees that are hearing and chanting about Krishna, if you can find them, which is hard. And he said, in lieu of that, if you can't find such an ideal or proper sangha, then best you stay alone, stay in your own grihastha house, which he did. He had his bhajan kuti in Puri, that was later in life, but in his house in Godrindvip, he had his bhajan room. He had to remember, he had 12 or 14 children, and so many, I mean, so many grandchildren, so many, I mean, his house must have been like a zoo. I mean, every kid gets married, and you know, and then so many sons are living at home with their wives, and then their kids, I mean, the grandkids, I mean, like it's like a zoo or a circus or something. So in the middle of that zoo, he made a bhajan room with a soundproof door, a 6-inch thick wooden door in his house, and he would go in there and do his bhajan. So he was advising that, he said, because, and then he said, from his own, dint of his own experience, he said, the tendency is that when Vaishnavas, at least in Kali Yuga, so-called Vaishnavas, or devotees, when they come together, when they get together, invariably all they end up doing is making offenses. Vaishnava Parad. Oh, Prabhu, how's everything? Yes, yes. Oh, I read this thing about Krishna in Bhagavatam. Yes, I read this in Chaitanya Charitamrita. And that goes on for about 5 minutes, talking about what they read or what they heard and some good things. And then, oh, by the way, did you see this and that? And then the next 6 hours is all about, you know, Gramya Katha and this Khan, Gaudiya Math, this, that, or whatever. And then ends up treading in dangerous waters, the waters of offenses, and then the two parties separate and go their separate ways and feel lousy. They feel disgusted and say, why did I talk to that person? Why I wasted my time? I feel terrible. I felt pretty good this morning when I woke up. Now I feel terrible. You know, I felt good about ISKCON, I felt good about my guru and about the devotees, and I ran into this person, so-called devotee. Now I feel terrible. I want to leave ISKCON, leave my guru, whatever. You know, this happened. So he was seeing that 100 years ago. So he said, play safe, stay by yourself. So, of course, the best way and the surest way and the most powerful way to make advancement is to be with advanced devotees. And that rule always holds true, no matter what time period it is. But nowadays, thinking of what Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying, I think generally it's best to do bhajan alone, or when you come out of your solitary bhajan, specifically go and seeking good association while avoiding bad association. Go out and find good association and come back in to your little cubby hole. And if you can't find, I remember when I was living in Ramanreti near the temple, many devotees, they would come, because classes are good, Bhagavatam classes are quite good, Gita classes. You would only see them. They would come to Mangalarti, they would come to class, and that's it. You don't see them. I say, where are you all day? Or, well, I never see you. Oh, I come to class, and then I get out of there as fast as I can. I go home to my house, and I do my work, and I hear and I chant. And I don't want to hang around at the temple and get involved with whatever I get involved with. So then sometimes people say, oh, you're antisocial. You're antisocial. You never mix with the devotees. You're always by yourself. Well, you think you're holier than thou. You're better than us. And who do you think you are? And then, you know, you're damned if you do and damned if you don't. And if you hang out with them, and then you just join them in their aparad parade. You join the parade and make lots of aparads, and that means you're a good guy then. You're a good guy if you hang around the temple and the restaurant and this and that and talk all Gramyakata, then you're a good guy. If you're staying by yourself, what is this? You know, you don't come to the temple anymore, you just stay by yourself. Listen, Jack, you know, you have to judge a thing by its results. That's what Prabhupada taught us. So I used to come to the temple and hang around, and I felt miserable. And I didn't really do me much good. So now you see me, I'm there, I'm Mangalartik, I'm in the Bhagavatam class. Am I there? Yeah, okay, you're there, but you don't come for the extracurricular activities. And I said, yeah, I'm busy, I'm downtown, I'm going here and there trying to find some saintly association. Well, you should do the same thing. Or create one, let's start one, let's create one, let's have a sangha.